Saturday night, the Bayagiri Monastery. We say these words often at the beginning of a talk or a reflection. Words like this is kind of creating a sense of time and place, purpose for convening together, for listening to Dhamma, practicing meditation together, and sometimes forgetting that the words we use and the ideas we create, the perceptions we try and generate around something like this or anything, are ways to convene a kind of reality or establish a certain perception of something more than just a presence of various blobs of protoplasm in a room space. You know, listening to some sounds emanating from another blob of protoplasm, but to create a sense of meaning, a sense of purpose, a sense of reality, in a sense, conventions. So we established the conventions of language and ideas to pull together a series of experiences like sights and sounds, sensations, to pull these all together into something that actually means something. So, Saturday night, here, a Bayagiri Monastery. Time, location, presence. And just to notice that tendency that we all have. It's not just a tendency, it's how we live our lives, creating these conventions to live out, to live in, to experience, to make a sense of the world. It's like a play, creating a play. We build up a set and make it look like a representation of some location or some sort of meaningful set of props. We walk into it, we inhabit it, we have a storyline that we're following, written by somebody else, usually. We pick up a role, and we develop a whole scenario, and we play it out, actors on a stage of our creation. And most of the time, the director is somebody we could maybe call Mara, who's not only the director, but the screenwriter and the managing operator of the stage and the play and how we live out our role. Ajahn Chah also, well, Ajahn Jeff's translation of one of Ajahn Chah's teachings uses the word suppositions. We suppose a reality into existence. So we create the story, we create the stage, we create a being in ourselves, we create other people as beings in and of themselves, and we jump into the whole scenario, the scene that we call the various stages of life, the various aspects of life, and we participate in it, we act it out. Most of the time we do that without any kind of clarity or awareness, just following the impulses that we brought in with us. But it does give us this sense of continuity, of reality, of stability. It's like living in, traveling through a construction zone. You see, we do that when we're driving along the road, hit a construction zone, and things are being built or created, erected up, buildings, different kinds of constructions. If we're speeding through it, we get a double fine. And I think our lives are kind of like that, like a construction zone. And most of the time we are speeding through it, we don't even see the constructions that we're creating. And we get, if we're speeding through it without much clarity through our constructions, then we get a double fine of dukkha, double the dukkha. Instead of 100 dukkhas, we get 200 dukkhas. We get the first 100 dukkhas of just the general unsatisfactoriness of trying to create something that's going to be pleasurable or avoid something that's painful part of the natural part of living in the human realm that we can't avoid, but we enter into craving or reactivity or, you know, the wanting to get rid of the difficult ones, then we've just we've doubled the fine. And we're engaged in this process of building artifices. Artifice being something like a facade in a way. It's a, there's our constructions and then we build other things on top of it. Other things that are temporary structures, like the analogy of the stage, things that are put up as representations of other realities. And we pretend that they're real, but they're actually really artificial. And I think about that because I reflect a lot, and I've mentioned this recently, even in a couple of talks. It just keeps on running through my mind. Ajahn Sumedho, Lungpur Sumedho's description of the first three fetters that keep us bound in the cycle of birth and death, those first three fetters being what he calls artificial or artificial conditioning, artificial constructions, if you will. And they're artificial because they create, they're certain artifices, they're constructions that aren't necessarily inherent part of the human rebirth, like the other seven fetters that come and condition the human rebirth. But they're even more unnecessary add-ons, the fetter, those first three fetters, they're artificial, right? Create this artifice of sense of permanence and reality and a creation of a whole story. So it's like the constructions that we do in our lives, the setting and the play, the script that we write for ourselves are like the rules and conventions fetter, the Sila Bhatta Paramasa, which beyond the rules and conventions aspect of it, Lungpur Sumedho often refers to the roles, the societal norms, the political viewpoints and stances that people take, the religious ideals, ideas, the beliefs that we hold, culture, identity, racial identity, gender identity, all of these ways that we define certain conventions and all of the rules that culture or society imputes onto those particular designations, structures that we create. And then if we hold on to them, rather than just using them as a necessary convention to get through a day without killing each other, then if we grasp onto them then and see them as a dead set reality and something that we need to believe in and defend and live through and grasp onto, then it becomes Sila Bhatta Paramasa, the attachment holding to rules and conventions or different roles and responsibilities and identities. And that being one of the first three fetters that we impose onto this human condition, and then create a sense of identity to participate in it. So we've set up the stage, we've set up the routine, we've set up the script with all of these conventions and ideas and definitions of how we should be in the world, our role in the world, how society should work, the whole economic system, the whole social system. We've set this up as the script. And then we pick up this identity as a human being and define that along various lines and insert ourselves into the script that's set up as, you know, from our own self perspective, we're the primary player in this drama. And we do it through this picking up of identity view, Sakkaya Ditti, one of the other three fetters, Sakkaya Ditti. It's me in this world, in this role, in this particular place, with these particular sets of rules and conventions. And it's me in relation to you or other people, the world around us. And we create this identity around the five aggregates that we form into some creation of who we are. There's some experience of who we think we are, whether it's the body or the various aspects of the mind, the feelings, perceptions, mental formations or thoughts, and consciousness, these five groupings, these five aggregates that we create into the actor, the primary actor in this script of conventions. And then there's that the third fetter of doubt, which I also really appreciate Ajahn Sumedho really spending a fair number of talks, time with his talks, and explaining that Ajahn Chah used to call doubt the result of excessive thinking, too much thinking. People think too much, get really twisted up in doubt. And so that, you know, we have our personality view, our identity view. We have this set of rules and conventions that we have established a sense of reality around, and we suffer with all of it. And we walk around in confusion about how to extract ourselves from this kind of conditioned experience, this play that we're living out. And we think about it, and we get lost in thinking, we get lost in proliferation, trying to figure out how to maximize pleasure, minimize pain, and missing most of the experience around us because we're so wrapped up in trying to maximize and minimize those experiences. We just lose track of the whole thing, get lost in confusion, think, plan, suppose more realities into existence, and wonder where it's all leading, what it's all going to. So, and not seeing a path out, the third fetter of skeptical doubt based on apancha, proliferation. So this is the activity of the constructing mind, the creating mind, supposing all of these realities into existence and then inhabiting them and living them out. Painful. And I would say it's recognizing this is largely why most of us are here in this conventional space of meditation hall in a Buddhist monastery. Try and get some handle on it. Try and get some sense of clarity about what to do with all of this. So we still are creating more conventions, convening around our conventions, and hopefully trying to redirect some of them so that the director and the screenwriter is the Buddha rather than Mara. And the stage that we create and the people that we see and perceive and work with have different MOs, different ways of operating from the usual, the conventional ways that we engage with this drama, kind of like creating a deconstruction zone rather than a construction zone, traveling through that, and no speeding is allowed. Have to slow down and see the process that we're going, see the script that we're writing, the play that we're living out. See it as clearly as we can as we do it, and choose to follow the various stories that we act out with knowledge of why we're doing it and the basis of the internal qualities that we're trying to live out. It's like there's the external construction zone, the deconstruction zone, I guess I should say, the external deconstruction zone that we create of going to places like monasteries, creating a Abhayagiri monastery, or meditation room in our own home, where we say, okay, well, I'm just going to stop the play here for a while and pick up, or at least pick up a different set of stories to act out, to live out. Ones that result in clarity and compassion and kindness and virtue, generosity, all these other values that we hold as skillful, wholesome values. We create a a script that can live those out. But even more so, because we know that those are the basis for our deconstruction project, and they need to be fully developed and nurtured. And they also have their conditioned limitations. They need constant renewal and support, which is a large part of our practice. And then we also need to choose some time and space to simplify, to step back, to stop constructing, and to create our deconstruction zone, where we slow down. The penalties are less. We create our internal deconstruction zone too, not just where we live, location, and having the right setup and props, but it's nurturing that simplicity inside, which is what our contemplative practice is all about. Stilling the mind, slowing down the mind, not building anything, not building, especially not the unskillful stuff, the proliferations, the bringing up of all the past memories, the playing out of those scenarios, not only stilling those and creating the skillful ones, the kindness, the patience, the spaciousness, the boundlessness, those things, but letting those drop at some point too, so that the whole construction project comes to a rest. And we get an experience and we see what it feels like to just step back and stop the project. And just rest in the knowing quality. What is it? We could ask ourselves, you know, what is it that we're deconstructing? And it's not that we're deconstructing all experience or blotting out life. We're not turning off all of the sense bases and shutting out the world, but we're deconstructing the entanglement that we have with it, the attachments that we form, the clinging to these various experiences, the clinging to the five aggregates, the five khandhas, the upadana khanda that's talked about in the teachings. There's the upadana khanda, the five aggregates of experience, the forms, feelings, perceptions, thoughts, and consciousness as affected by clinging, the holding, the grasping. And then there's the five khandhas without the grasping. So what we're looking to deconstruct is the grasping khandhas, dropping back to allowing experience to be just what it is through this way of viewing our experience through the five aggregates and the six senses as well, the six sense-based contemplations, but doing it without constructing this sense of self around it. The grasping khandhas are really a product of this sense of the all-pervasive clinging to a sense of me, mine, myself, who I am in relation to these five aggregates. And that's where dukkha arises. So a fun contemplation is, what is this deconstruction of the upadana khandhas? What is it that I'm, what might I experience? What might it be like? What might it be like to experience non-attachment, non-clinging in relation to the five khandhas, the five aggregates? What would it be like to be free of that grasping of a sense of self, the construction of a sense of me and mine in relation to experience? Because again, we're not trying to annihilate experience. We're just trying to drop back from being someone in relation to it, just to know it as it is. Make skillful choices when we need to, and just not get involved in the creation process when we don't need to. How can we maybe experience a bit of, say, of non-clinging, non-grasping around the body, the first kind of, just take a time, take a moment to, we've got a beautiful forest here. When we're walking through the forest, walking through the trails, doing the loop trail or coming down from our kutis, walking anywhere around, the stimulation is very peaceful. We don't have to get involved with too many distracting sights and sounds and odors and happenings like on a city street. We can use nature as a way to help soothe and calm and settle and ground ourselves in the body. And we just pick up a contemplation of body walking, dropping back from having to plan anything or think about anything or where we're going or how we're going to get there or when we're going to get there or what we're going to do when we get there, and just be with a moving body. Not me, not mine, one step after another. There is a body. Just using that reflection. There is a body. Here is a body. Nothing else. Just one step after another, body moving through the forest, letting the sights and sounds and sensations move through that knowing awareness without going out to them, without going out to the thoughts, the proliferations. Just letting them move through as the body's walking step after step, making that a conscious contemplation. We've got this excellent location and encouragement to do that. So it's a great way to get a sense of how to deconstruct that sense of ownership around the body, get that feeling of just knowing it, not trying to obliterate the experiences, but just stepping back from creating stories or scenarios, letting go of that sense of control around the body, or using occasions like illness or inconvenience or whatever to help deconstruct that sense of self, reflections on the transition, the transitive nature of the bodily experience. And the general lack of control, you know, your body doesn't really ask you for permission to do certain things. It's like, my heart didn't come up to me and say, Kurunadamo, do you mind if I bust a few of those little tendons in your heart and have you go through some surgery? I wasn't asked. Or the cancer surgery I had a number of years ago. It's, you know, you don't get asked these things. So just realizing that it's just the body moving around, doing what it needs to be doing. Our feelings, the feelings of pleasure and pain, they don't ask us, do you mind if we have a few painful moments here? Get that question from our feelings. They just arise as they arise. And it's our tendency is to react to them, to run away from the unpleasant ones and to run after the pleasant ones in our minds, trying to maximize one and minimize the other and then missing most of what's in between. So just stepping back from that whole process and letting feelings just be feelings, not moving into reactivity, not moving into seeking, not moving into avoiding, holding very consciously the tendency, watching the tendency to move into something pleasurable, to just hold back for just a bit, you know, to not to deny the existence of a pleasurable experience, but not to move into it with seeking, with wanting, letting the self aspect of it disintegrate in a sense, not even letting it arise, just by holding it very spaciously and not letting the mind move out towards it, and holding with space and kindness the unpleasant, with patience, using that virtue of patience to create a big holding space so that we don't get caught in self-reactivity, self-oriented reactivity to run away. We don't have to take ownership of it. The world is 50-50, pleasant, unpleasant, accepting the naturalness of that. And our perceptions, we create such a reality around our perceptions, the images, the memories, particularly around people, you know, how easy it is to create other people in our minds based on some past experience and to keep reinforcing those images, grasping tightly to how we think somebody is, how we should relate to them, how we do relate to them, the pain that that creates. I remember a retreat long time ago at Cloud Mountain with Ajahn Sumedho, and theme for one of his theme for one of his talks was admonishing us not to keep creating him, says, you're sitting there and you're creating Ajahn Sumedho. Stop that. Don't create me. I'm not here. Another way that we create a reality and then inhabit it through our perceptions. Or then taking it even a further step with the next one, the thoughts. What would it be like to just be free from that conceiving process that takes our perceptions and our feelings and really runs with them, turns them into a story, and makes a whole script out of it, our play, our the script for our play. How to just, we can restrain from doing that. We can catch ourselves earlier and earlier in that conceiving process, that creation of sankharas and stories based on some sort of misperception or distorted feeling and the desires and aversions that are underneath it. And when we find ourselves creating stories, writing the actual words in the script and entering into the process of thinking and proliferation, then if we drop back from that and just to feel the feeling, drop the story, feel the feeling, experience the perception, but just allow the verbal process to quiet down. This is what meditation is very useful for, to just help still and calm the thinking process. We don't get rid of it, because that's the nature of the intellect, is to produce thoughts, but we don't believe in them so much, and we drop back from them, and we let them settle down and calm down and replace them with soothing, calm kinds of thoughts rather than proliferative thoughts. Imagine what that would be like to be able to do that, just to be able to step back and drop into peaceful non-construction of the mental world. And the same with consciousness, the last of the aggregates. You know, we have this conscious experience that takes us from one sense experience to another, a sight or a sound or a taste or a feeling in the body, etc. The physical senses darting, our attention darting from one to the other, consciousness arising in one sense experience another, and particularly the thought realm, mental consciousness, the intellect, all of it rapidly happening so fast that it creates this illusion of continuity. The mind goes out and lands on a thought. The mind goes out and lands on a sight, goes out, hears a sound, and keeps on doing that over and over again every split second. Call it the magician. Buddha refers to it as the magician's trick, consciousness weaving this sense of continuity of experience. And then we attach the perception of me to it all as well. So we can start to contemplate the possibility of form of consciousness that doesn't land and grow on a particular sense base. It's a clarity of knowing that steps back, doesn't go out through the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the body, the mind. It doesn't go out through those sense doors, land, take root, grow, proliferate, and create a reality, weave a web of a reality, this play that we're constructing ourselves to be the primary actor in. The mind just rests in itself, doesn't go out. Ubha Ajahn's described this very, very peaceful, blissful, non-entangled, unentangled, and unentangled knowing, no outward going knowing. So we can imagine what that might be like. We can even experience a little bit of it ourselves every now and then, stepping back, not going out through the sense bases, deconstruction. Our deconstruction zone. So you think of that. Think of that as just, you know, like, there's just this body moving, body doing its thing, following the laws of nature, the mind following the laws of its own nature. There's the nature of the mind, the laws of the mind, as well as the laws of physical reality and the way they operate. And just letting them do that while we try to use skillful motivations, skillful set of instructions, skillful script in the process of letting go of all scripts, creating a different reality, creating a different play, I said, with the Buddha in charge rather than Mara, and then allowing the deconstruction to happen altogether, so that the play, the sets, we just take apart the sets, and we dismantle them, and we get rid of all of the artifices that we've built up that we don't need. As we don't need them, we let them go. We don't participate in the storyline anymore with a sense of me, sense of mine, sense of other, sense of self and other. There's experiences arising. There's experience through the senses arising. There's the different ways that we can feel and understand our experience, but we don't add that layer of constructed self-identity to complicate and entangle our sense of self into the whole thing. And the mind, as our teachers describe it, it just stays still, alert, aware, clear, quiet, knowing fully, but not getting involved in all of the stuff around us. We allow experience to pass through our minds rather than going out to it. And repeating that Upasaka Ghi phrase, the unentangled knowing, no outward going knowing, all outward going knowing cast aside, an inward staying, unentangled knowing. That's what we're looking to experience, develop in the process of deconstruction. And there's a chant that we often do, short chant on the Buddha's first exclamation. And the last line in it is something about the non-constructing mind leading to craving's end. Something like that. Non-constructing mind knows craving's end. So, speaking of constructions, I just want to, I think most people here know that I'm constructing a reality in a few days to leave Abhayagiri, to return to England, to spend some more time at Chithurst Monastery. So just wanted to say, well, I won't be leaving for a couple of days yet, but probably the last time I give any reflections. So I just want to express my appreciation for the community, for this constructed reality here and the people that inhabit it, however temporarily. That's a great place to act out some skillful behaviors, some skillful ways of being. And I'm just so glad that it's here for all of us, and that there are other places similarly to do our deconstruction process. And just want to wish everybody well, and to stay in touch with what's important, to keep creating these zones of sanity and inhabiting them for as long as we need to. So I'll leave it for this evening's considerations.